Blog Talk Radio.
Game Centric Radio. GGZR.
Welcome to Game Centric Radio's Review of Palooza 2 Electric Boogaloo.
That's a great game reference.
This year, we were lucky enough to have the two cons in our local area come back to back. Lake County's Northwest Indiana Comic Con happened. And then just this past Saturday, we were at ArcticCon in Valparaiso at Valparaiso University. Thank you very much, ArcticCon hosts, for inviting us to check out your awesome con. We have a lot to tell everyone about today. Who may have not been there, or maybe you were there and you just didn't make it to every table. And one of our guest writers did a write-up of the con as well. It's his first time at ArcticCon. His name is Josh. He's the one who did the guest write-up for Northwest Indiana Comic-Con. We miss you, Scott. Stop being so busy that you can't leave Wisconsin. But Josh has been really awesome about jumping in and helping with the write-up. And so his write-up went live actually 1 hour ago on Tumblr. So thank you, Josh. Josh is also from the same university. He's an alum from Purdue as well and an alum of our same gaming group. So we're really glad he was able to join us. At ArcticCon, but it could not have been a more perfect setup. I just have to say that. I was in round one of people coming in. Because we split into a couple of groups. And so I came in with Dan Mike, and we were lucky enough to get a booth exactly next to Help Me Mommy, the local Rocky Horror Shadowcast.
Emma, that was lucky.
Yeah. But basically, I said to the guy, so I'm repping both of these groups. Is there any way that our tables could be somewhat near each other, if that's possible? I mean, it was still very early. We got there, and, like, the con hadn't officially opened. Only, like, dealers and vendors and press were there at that point. And so they were still setting up a lot of tables. So he was like, if you just need one table for each, that's fine. Let us have this little corner, and it was really cool. It's such a well-organized convention. And so we were able to work very closely with Help Me Mommy throughout the con, which meant more coverage for everyone. And then round two came in a little while later.
Yes. And, maybe we should tell these people who we are.
Yes. I'm Jade Greenberg, normally your trivia mistress, but this week, your cosplay mistress.
And I'm Donnie Greenberg, and I'm usually the host. But as you can tell, I don't have the voice for hosting right now. I spent a week to get this volume.
Poor Donnie's still suffering conflict from NWI Comic Con.
It's the fallout. It's all the coughing as well. Right. Lost my voice.
And unfortunately, Mike can't make the showtime when we are live. He has to pre-record. So hopefully within the next few weeks, we'll be having him pre-record some segments. But him and I explored some parts of the con together, and you also get to see a bit of his perspective in Josh's write-up, because they did a tag team write-up where Dead asked a lot of questions, being a very experienced con-goer, and Josh, being an experienced writer with a degree in writing, followed him around and wrote things, and so it was awesome. So I am going to start with the cosplay, if that's okay.
Go right ahead.
So, cosplay, well, first let me go back and talk about last year. Last year they were holding a cosplay contest, and one of the unique things about the cosplay contest at ArcticCon is that they accept original characters, and that is not something that you find a lot of places. A lot of places you can do deviations on existing characters, or you can do older or younger versions, or you can do opposed gender or chibi. but you can't create a whole new character. So last year, because we had never covered a costume contest in detail before, I actually entered with one of my original characters, who's an Umbrella Corporation scientist. She's an infectious disease specialist. And we entered specifically, or I entered and got into pictures specifically for the express purpose of trying to see what it's like from the inside. So we got a really cool experience of seeing what there was to it, what process one went through. It was really neat because the forms that one gets when one is writing up, like one is prepping to go through the contest, you write about your character. So if you're playing an established character, you write if you're playing like the standard version, if you're doing an alternative world version, say for example, you're doing Spider-Man, but you're doing Spider-Man from the Marvel Zombies era.
Yeah.
Or something like that. So you'd indicate all that. If you're doing an original character, you write a little bit of backstory about that original character, who he or she is, he, she, or it is, and explain a little bit about what the costume means and represents. And Rose Noir, who is a local cosplay celebrity.
I don't have that register. I tried to woo.
Zaddy has known Miss Noir for quite some time. We have seen her around several events together. And so she, last year, when I was actually in the competition, one of the things that was really cool was that, so you went through, and there was more than one judge. It was not just her, but she was the featured judge. And then you would go up and you would give them your form, and they would ask you questions about your character. And I don't know what the experience is like with an established character as much, but I know having an original character, she asked me things like what had inspired that character, what that character's goals were, things like that. And after interviewing every contestant, they then chose like the top three and then a couple of honorable mentions. This year, I believe they just chose the top three.
Yeah, it was a much
smaller. Yeah. And so this year, instead of focusing on getting into the contest itself and kind of covering it from the inside, instead, we interviewed Miss Rose Noir herself. And I had kind of thought, just because of the way that, you know, we've worked several cons where we've both been. She's at Robin Con with us, and not like directly with us, but I mean, we see her a lot.
She's always like 2 feet away.
Yeah, usually her table is right near ours. Especially when we work with Help Me Mommies, they kind of put the theatrical groups together. And so I really thought that based on her level of skill of cosplay, that she had been doing it for a long time. I expected to hear that she had been doing it since she was like a preteen or a teenager, basically since cosplay started, and was absolutely floored to hear she's only been cosplaying since 2012.
Mm-hmm.
But she has her experience. She was an alternative model for 10 years before that. And so she took her experience as an alternative model and carried that over into cosplay. And she really likes dressing up, making costumes, and meeting people. So I asked her, you know, okay, so she started in 2012. We're, you know, about 3 years in, and she's already a featured judge. She was a featured judge last year. You know, how did she get into that level? And she said she started going in cosplay to cons and fell into it. She hasn't made her own full costume. She commissions things from people that she can't make. She makes parts of it. And she's actually working on a brand new costume for her signature character, Purgatory. And she made very clear that she feels there's nothing wrong with commissioning someone to make parts for you, or taking something that's pre-constructed and altering it. In her signature purgatory costume, she wears wings. And she said those wings were originally purple. She painted them. She painted them herself. And, you know, she said that it's one of those things where if you can find someone who can get you what you need, or you can get something that's close to what you need adapted, that is, you know, just as significant. And that really followed what, when we talked to a cosplayer at NWICon.
We met.
What?
Oh, no, that's
I'm right. Talking about Tax. Who is one of our Lokis. And you know, hearing from him that the idea of commissioning, you know, shouldn't be, that's not the same as going into a Halloween store and buying something. That's still creativity. That's still somebody building it. You know, it doesn't have to be you building it. So Ms. Rosnora said that she attends sometimes up to 5 cons a year. The last couple of years she's been invited to 2 or 3, and so she's been doing that. She said there are some people who can make a living out of cosplay, but she's not there yet. She referenced another well-known cosplayer in our area, Yaya. But she said for her, she's still in the starving artist part of it, where, you know, it's hard to try to get everything that you need and still at the same time, you know, kind of split your time between the things you need to do in your life to make money and to, you know, kind of deal with this day-to-day life versus trying to make it in cosplay, so doing a lot of creative work. And then for her, especially with her characters, she works out a lot. You know, she makes a lot of effort into her appearance. Her character, Purgatory, I know the name kind of conjures up this demon, and it very much looks like a succubus. It's kind of the look of Purgatory.
Yeah.
And so, of course, you know, she's strikingly beautiful. And the costume that she was wearing this time, because she was not wearing her signature Purgatory, she was wearing an alternative Purgatory. It was
Purgatory in human form.
Yeah, in mortal form. The Egyptian slave who gets turned into this vampire demon is how she explains. And she said the character of Purgatory comes from a comic. And so the character that she was playing this time, the version she addresses this time, comes from the first issue. She said that Dynamite Comics recently brought back the character of Purgatory. So there will be new material, actually, for her to go to. She said that the downside of the cosplay world is definitely that people will try to tear each other down, will try to... And the idea that some people have this misconception of that you need to cosplay to your gender, to your race, to your size, exactly. And she isn't. That's not something that she believes is necessarily true. She said that she personally was inspired by a Purgatory figure on her wall. That's how she got inspired. She thought, I already look kind of like the character. I have the right build. I have the right hair. I'm going to go for it. But she made clear that she doesn't feel that doing opposite gender or going against race or gender bending the character completely, you know, is a problem or should be seen as one. You know, I asked her about how she feels about different sizes in cosplay. Anyone who's seen pictures of me in cosplay knows that, like, I'm a bigger girl. And so for me, like, I want to hear the perspective of someone who is probably literally the exact perfect size, because she is. She said, as far as cosplay, it shouldn't be about trying to find a character that matches your actual size, but finding a flattering costume for the character that fits you. And trying to find, you know, the right costume, the right pieces, and focusing on what the character wears. You know, she was saying, like, it's not even, you know, say a woman wants to play Lady Beth, who is very, well, how would I say, just busty, I guess would be the word.
Right.
Very busty. Someone who isn't extremely busty could certainly still play Lady Beth. You don't have to have the exact same body type. But it's more important to have a good costume, and a costume is appropriate for the convention because, you know, there are kids there, and wearing something that, you know, is covering enough so that it's not absolutely something that somebody wouldn't want to bring their kids back to. We talked about the idea of judging cosplay and judging original characters versus established characters, and she said that she would like to see them as two different contests, ideally. Because with original characters, she would like to know so much more about the backstory, the clothing, the props, showcasing, you know, when somebody wants to be their own character, showcasing how creative they can be. And in a contest that mixes original with established, you don't get to highlight that as much. And so she was, I have to say, she was so incredibly nice. At one point in the middle of the interview, one of the convention had pulled her away to draw a raffle ticket. And the minute she had done that, she hurried back to finish the interview. She seems very gracious.
Well, this con is absolutely more centered towards what we focus on, which is games. And I have not been to a con that is more generous than this one. Literally giving something out every couple of hours. And they just had more this year. They didn't even have a sponsor like they did last year. They saw that people liked it. And they bought a bunch of stuff and made sure they had it. I got two games, like two full Rio Grande games, which is the company that makes Dominion, the card game.
It's important to note, too, that this con donates to soldiers.
Yes. This con was actually for the Wounded Warrior Project. And you could actually get Thor Fry's tickets, which is what the raffle I entered, by bringing canned food. And they were shipping that off literally as we were walking out of the con.
But yeah, there's so very many prizes, opportunities sent to raffle. And then one thing that happens, too, is a lot of the different areas, the different places that have come and had tables, they've kind of taken a page from that book and done a lot of raffling as well. I know Help Me Mommy did a raffle, and Help Me Mommy also had out a tub of, like, donation bucket for Relay for Life.
Yeah.
Because well, Help Me Mommy supports lots of groups, including the Wounded Warrior Project. One of the biggest orgs that they work with is
Relay for Life,
which is an annual thing. But Help Me Mommy raffled off a dice bag with dice in it and a t-shirt. There were a lot of games being raffled off. What were some of the other things being raffled off?
T-shirt. That was what I'll be mommy that raffled off.
Yeah, but there were, I mean, a lot of it was games. It was.
I mean, there were other things that we donated to other raffles.
Right, but I mean, like,
AKA we bought and then brought over to the other table.
Yeah. But just all over that con, constantly they were, you know, calling out ticket numbers for different raffles.
Also, the best part, I walked in the door, and you can see this is where I talked to the con man, the first one that was sitting there on the counter. He's like, go ahead, take what you want, it's all free. And there's just like these 6-4 games. I only got two, one for me and one for Jay, because I wanted other people to have a chance.
I was so very grateful because since I came in during setup, they didn't have that out yet.
And they very much focus on making sure you have the time that you're looking for. And being handed a free board game when you walk in the door is kind of like having that good time that you wanted.
They constantly had different types of tournaments running, also open
over
play
30,
games.
Actually. They had a wall of open play boards.
There were also some other just random cool things. I think it was the business cards right over there. The wooden business card.
So they do not want to talk about them yet.
Well, but I'm just saying, like, you could get adverts for almost everywhere, like, some people were displaying work that they're not yet selling.
Yeah.
Some people, Placey Thingy, or Placey Thing, which is a table where I bought that sticker for you, Donnie.
Okay.
Run by Ruth and her partner, whose name I can't remember, but they're mentioned in the write-up. So they had stickers and other material, including etched glass, and they take commissions. There were a lot of different kinds of food that you can buy throughout the day.
Gyros. Pizza.
Soda.
They were selling snacks all day.
And they're definitely a con that is very focused on making sure people are comfortable. There's a lot of seating right outside of where they are.
Yeah.
They host in Hari or Har Union, H-A-R-R-E.
I call it Hare. H-A-R-R-E-E.
What E?
Then H-A-R-R-E.
Yep. Which is on the Valpo U campus. And I think that's really, that's kind of ironic because, this is an incredibly high-end campus, private college, and yet they make it affordable enough for this con to come multiple years. And I think what's great is the people who come to the con really respect the space. And I know at one point, like, I walked into the ladies' room and there were several women getting ready, like, getting into their cosplay makeup and, like, making sure they weren't picking up all the things, just, like, things that, you know, all together, like, everyone being very just considerate. Like, it's a very friendly con, I feel like.
Like, it's one of the most generous and friendly environments there could ever possibly be. There was a lot of 50-50 for charity they were working in. I don't know if you noticed, but they had more room than last time.
They did. They did. I didn't notice that.
They opened up a whole other ballroom that made a huge difference. And they kind of shifted the focus from having a lot of vendors to having a lot of games. So there were Pokemon tournaments. There were Magic the Gathering. There was
Catan.
Settlers of Catan. I participated in a bunch.
Diggity. Who is one of the con men, but also was working the, he was co-running the Help Me Mommy table with me. He entered a Settlers of Catan tournament. We shut down our tables right after 6 p.m. when Help Me Mommy did the final giveaway. And there were still going to be games going on. Even though most of the vendors were packing up by then, there were still games going to be going on until like 10:30 at night.
Yes. And they're looking forward to doing 2 days next year.
They need 2 days.
They said that would be the next step for them in doing theater.
That's awesome. The only reason we closed down actually at 6 is because Help Me Mommy had a show that night. And
we closed down at 6, but we didn't leave till like 7.
Yeah. But, you know, Help Me Mommy has a show every Saturday night, and we were covering that because there was a guest performer that night as well. So, but it was, I want to see them do 2 days. I want to see them do 2 days, and I want to see, so my request, if I had, you know, like, I guess to make my list would be definitely 2 days, definitely to do 2 costume contests, one cosplay, original characters, and one cosplay, established characters. And then to have panels in other areas.
I would really like them to be able to have vendors that didn't hate each other. Because, unfortunately, there was only one vendor that was a game shop this year. That was, like, Sweet Hollies. And they sold out. Well, they didn't sell out, but they sold a lot very quickly. And last year they had 3 different game shops.
Technically, one of those game shops was represented this year. They just didn't have a vendor table. The gaming library, where people could pick up a game and play it without any requirement to purchase. In fact, there wasn't even really the opportunity to purchase, just to sample new games, and that was generously brought on board by Mr. Sweet.
Yes. I would also like to see a place where we could actually play those games in the future. I only saw like 3 or 4 tables that were open.
Yeah, more tables for sure. Mike said it on a couple of those games. One thing that they were really good about, though, is the Valparaiso Youth staff were really good at bringing out more tables when they were needed, especially those long folding tables. That was something that was nice, especially early on when they had a lot of staff working. Had people known how big the gaming library was, like how well that was going to be taken, they probably would have set up a lot more space.
Yeah.
But this was the first time they were doing that. So I'm sure next year we'll see a larger space for that. And I'm sure that we'll see in the future, like, I would love to see, like, a full-on Artist Alley instead of just, like...
Like, they had one last year.
Yeah.
It was, like, 3 tables this year.
And mixed in with vendors.
And I understand that. They wanted to shift the focus more towards gaming, which is great. But a lot of people go to cons to be able to shop. And also learn about different things in the area. Games are not, you know?
Yeah. I think a 2-day event will allow them to have more stations and more opportunities.
I think so too.
What was your favorite thing of the con?
My favorite thing of the con? This is my... Next to Gen Con, this is my favorite con. And it's because they are so incredibly generous to their press, to their attendees, to everyone that's there. They try to accommodate to the best of their ability. And that's my favorite.
I'm going to cheat and have 2 favorites. One was the part where they actually reached out to GameCentric Radio and contacted us because I thought it was really cool that they remember who their press was. You know, they remembered who did coverage last year. They kept track of that, and I thought that was amazing. The other thing was the fact that there was so much to see. Even if someone was working the table, which ended up being my situation most of the time, I was working one of the 2 tables, or I was actually doing interviewing. If I walked through the room to leave the room for a minute to use the facilities or something, I got to see a lot of cool stuff going on. You know, there was just, people were very open with what they were doing and I thought it was really funny because Placey Thing, which is Ruth, who is the sister of a really good friend of mine, Sha, and Ruth is someone who we've been at the same weddings and, you know, we're in the same social circle kind of tangentially. One of the guys who was working the table for Help Me Mommy comes up to me with his phone, and he has this photo of something at one of the tables, and he's like, I know you're going to want to buy one of these. I know you're going to want to buy one of these. And I looked at it, and it was just this adorable sticker. And I was like, where is that? And so we, like, really quick ran across to the table, and it turned out to be Placey Thing.
You could do the con mic.
Yeah. And so I bought that one, and I ended up buying a sticker for Donnie as well because I saw one that was perfect. You know, I was sad to see that one table wasn't there this year. The table where you bought the
dog
game.
Breath.
Yeah, dog breath games. I would love to see them come back.
Yeah, I was upset. I was hoping that they have a new game expansion.
Yeah.
But maybe they got picked up. There was a copy of their game there.
Yeah.
Which I think was brought to Mr. Sweets. But other than that, I would really like to see them. I liked that guy.
Yeah. He was a lot of the reason we bought that game, just his enthusiasm about it. That's the thing, though. Like, at that con, people are really enthusiastic about what they're doing. There's nothing worse than being at any type of convention or conference, and I say this not in reference to other pop culture cons in the area, but I'm thinking of professional conferences I've gone to, where someone is horribly disinterested in what they're doing at their table. I've been to, you know, I've seen at National Pop Culture Association cons, there are the tables where there are publishers who are so excited with the books, and then the ones where they just have the people who travel around and sell stuff for them. Where, like, really, the person, you can tell they're just counting down the minutes until they can either go get their bourbon or go lay down or, you know, whatever the case might be. Someone else's enthusiasm will always pique my enthusiasm. Even if I don't end up purchasing, I'm much more likely to ask questions, consider recommending it to someone else in the future, or you know, sending even, you know, a friend over who I know is into that kind of thing. And that's one thing that I've discovered at Arcticon is people are not, they seem genuinely interested in what they're doing. So did you have anything else you want to talk about with the con?
Not right now.
Okay, so Scott was unable to join us tonight. Because he is actually in a play. No, it's not Rocky Horror Picture Show. I'm not actually sure what it is. I'm sure he'll talk about it next time he's on. However, he has left us with his impromptu game review, and here it is.
Hey guys, this is Scott Dyer with another impromptu game review. And I have with me my special cohort.
I am FDP once and back again.
So, in this week, we're going to do an impromptu review of Quarriors, Light versus Dark. And this is the latest expansion to the Quarriors dice building game. We've done a impromptu review of that as well, so if you want to have a look-see at our archives, I encourage you to look at that, because I'm going to be basing a lot of this review on that one. I'll try to give you guys a little bit of a primer as to
refresh.
What Quarriors, and to refresh you a little bit, but for the most part, we're going to focus on this newest expansion to the Quarriors Quartiverse, if you will.
Yeah, Quartiverse.
Yeah, pretty decent there, too. So, Quarriors, for those of you who don't know, is a dice-building game. You heard us right. It is a dice-building game. It's kind of like a deck-building game, only with dice. And in this game, in the original expansions, you had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of custom dice. So, if you really like playing games with a lot of custom dice, this is certainly the game for you. And in our last review, we gave it a pretty decent review because we liked the abilities to build a deck out of dice, which was we thought was very novel and things like that. But we also liked the fact that it had a lot of strategy and a lot of depth to the game as well.
That it did.
And with Quarriors Light versus Dark, they don't disappoint. It actually adds a lot more to the Quarriors quarterverse, if you will.
And some frustrating bits.
A little bit, but we'll get to that to our final thoughts at the end of this review. Quarriors Light vs. Dark is, like I said, the latest expansion to this Quarriors game, and it actually introduces, like we've been saying before, a light and dark component to the game. In this expansion, you get light Quiddity as well as dark Quiddity. And in addition to what Quiddity does in the normal game, which is your currency, the light Quiddity and dark Quiddity actually give you a lot of additional abilities to utilize should you have the appropriate amounts of either one. In this set, you have 6 new creatures that you can use that both have light or dark alignments, in essence. And with this, you also have what are called light and dark anchored spells. And you also have what are called light and dark costs, and reduced costs, if you will, lowered costs, if you have an appropriate number of light.
Have the right amount of dark Quiddity, you can buy the creature for cheaper.
Mm-hmm. The game itself plays, it actually, for being an expansion, actually plays a little bit differently than the other expansions and the base set of Quarriors.
In that,
instead of having several basic Quiddity dice to pull from and roll throughout the game, you have 2 larger Quiddity dice that you roll constantly throughout the game.
I like this.
It's a little bit different, and it actually makes culling a little bit easier, because in this expansion, culling is very non-existent. If you've played the original expansion, you were able to cull dice as you score them. In this version, you can't do that. They don't allow you to do that. However, to replace that, each card, or different cards, I should say, have an ability to cull kind of built into it. So with that, we thought that, you know, if you can't cull the dice as easily, you would have, like, these larger deck sizes, and it just becomes a very convoluted game by the time you get to the ending of the game. And for the most part, it wasn't too terrible. We were able to get enough cards to cull and... And
mid-sized
like
hand. You rarely did your hand ever get big.
Yes.
Your deck never got big. Your hand very often wasn't big, but yet you still had the opportunity to be able to draw a lot if that's how you planned your deck, as well as, you know, call out what you needed.
Exactly. So with the light versus dark mechanics, they also provide with you a number of additional strategies you can employ throughout the game. The anchored spell abilities are kind of this pull away from the Marvel Dice Masters game, which was also developed by WizKids. This was sort of their departure from the Quarriors game for a little bit to do something a little different with that. One of the abilities in the Marvel Dice Masters game set was an anchored ability that each card has, or some cards have, that are sort of always available to either player to use on their turn. And Quarriors, they use that, and actually does a fairly good job of implementing it. And that if there is an anchored spell on the board, any player can spend an appropriate amount of light or dark Quiddity to use that spell. And it could vary from either nuking or destroying a monster on your opponent's field to culling or rolling additional dice. So they have
you summon a certain creature, light or dark. You spend the amount of light or dark Quiddity to use the anchor, and you can gain more glory that way.
Indeed. So a lot of utility, and it gives you another thing to do with the Quiddity during the course of your turn. For the most part, the way to play the game is fairly the same. There's not too much changed in that regard. Again, the only big changes were the culling rules have changed slightly, and of course the anchored spells have also changed. But another addition to the light and dark Quiddity, you also have with these creatures, they have a light or dark cost associated with them. This simply is, if you have light or dark Quiddity to spend towards the cost of that creature, you can actually get that creature at a discounted rate. So it allows you to get bigger creatures sooner, provided you have the light or dark Quiddity to spend towards that overall cost, which actually made the game go a little bit quicker because you didn't have to worry about getting a very high number. As long as you had light or dark quiddity, you could get those powerful creatures sooner to end the game a little bit faster.
And in your hand, you usually always ended up with one, two, or a couple light or dark quiddity, so therefore you could buy into it much sooner.
Yes. So it did provide a little bit more tactical and strategizing that sort of had happened throughout the game, but I was not left feeling bored or stalled out at any point during the game. I felt like every move I made had a purpose. Every move I went through had an end goal in sight. So it kept the game moving, and it kept the game itself very dynamic in that with those additional bits of strategy. Now, we say this is an expansion, but not really, because with Quarriors Light versus Dark, they don't exactly play nicely with the other expansions. This is sort of like what they've done with the Corrupted Quiddity expansion pack with Quarriors, which is if you're a Quarrier aficionado, you tend not to talk about this particular expansion very much. And when I saw this at first, and you know, I saw what it was doing, I was a little leery of that. But if you're a little bit more open to modifying the rules of the game a little bit, and they do have like several optional rules you can take out, put in, take out, put in, you can actually get the expansions to play pretty nicely with the light versus dark. What we've done for our own sort of integration test, if you will, is we took the Quartifax questing mechanic and implemented it on top of the light versus dark game. And it actually created a very fun experience because on top of all the light versus dark mechanics, you can now also quest with your quarry, and you still had a lot of that. I don't feel like it pulled away at all from the game itself. I still felt like it was a very tight game and kept things moving forward.
Yeah, and it also, when you got like your big heavy hitters out, if you sent them on a quest, they're in the questing zone. So therefore, any of the anchor spells that allow you to nuke or destroy a creature, a light or dark creature in your ready zone, were safe.
Yes, because it's how the game is worded out, the quest area is actually a separate area from the ready area where those spells usually would do their most damage. So it gave you, the player, to sort of an incentive to quest to avoid some of those effects. So again, it gave you that extra layer of strategy to keep things going and keep you
moving forward.
Yes. So
towards the quest.
So with that said, though, I think the Quarriors Light versus Dark, I think it's a very solid sort of base set, and probably this could be something that would probably lead to other sets that would fit with it's within its own sort of subset, if you will.
I'd agree with that.
I'm still a little leery of just throwing in all the creatures together in one big pile and mixing them up, because a lot of the other creatures that don't have a light or dark alignment, I feel like you're not going to get as much bang for your buck buying those creatures with the extra quiddity. You're just going to end up using it as regular quiddity. Which is fine, because the creatures in the other sets have very good abilities on their own. They're very powerful. And, of course, if you're going to start questing and using locking abilities and stuff, you get a lot of interesting mechanics that way. But my fear is that, much like the Corrupted Quiddity set expansion, you're going to dilute it so much that you're not going to see a lot of the light and dark mechanics come up often enough to make those mechanics really stick in any larger scale game.
I was going to bring that up as well, because you are not going, if you add in all the, like, hundreds of creatures that you can be putting in, the odds of you actually getting a light or a dark creature is not going to be that high for you actually to be using it. So it may be nice, but yet it's still kind of going, eh?
We'll have to do a TBD, TBA, and we'll have to do a follow-up to do like a Quarriors Mega Edition and see how everything sort of gels together and fleshes out. Because one of the things we saw at the very beginning was of the rulebook, it says, yeah, you can combine everything, but you have to take out the portal cards first. And we really like our portal cards, as you will listen in the first impromptu review.
We loved our portal.
And we loved the portal dice. Those were pretty nice. So when they said you have to take them out, we were like, I don't know if that's something we want to do just yet. I'm not ready to let go of the portals just yet. So we'll have to do some more playtesting. We'll have to kind of congeal something together. And who knows? Maybe we'll come up with like a modified set of rules to get everything kind of, you know, kicking and screaming together. So, but standalone, I think it's a very solid set to the Quarriors Quarterverse, if you will. And, you know, it like I said, it's a smaller set. It's a smaller base set than the original base set. But I feel like with the additional layers of that light and dark mechanic, the anchored spells and sort of those things, I think it adds enough strategy to where I didn't feel like, even though I'm still playing with the same six creatures every time, each creature has five variations of itself, so it kept the mechanics interesting enough to keep wanting to play again and again.
You had the each variations where you had its normal variation, its lesser, its greater, its mighty, and strong.
Yes.
And in the normal quarters, you had the regular, the mighty, and the
strong. Yeah, so you had three, and then this one has five each. And I think that's just to make up for the fact that there's only six different creatures in the set, and only two spells in the set, too. There's a light spell and a dark spell. And, of course, each of those spells, much like the original expansions, had five variations as well. So a lot of interesting things you can do. And, you know, if you have the Quartifact set, I would encourage that you play this with just the quest cards and the Squire. You don't have to add the other creatures. If you want to try it with the creatures, go right ahead. It's certainly open for experimentation. But we feel like the questing mechanic works really well with the light versus dark.
Yeah, that it does.
So in the end, I think this is a good recommendation for those of you who are interested in seeing the latest Quarrier set. If you want to keep collecting those dice, and there's many finely crafted custom polyhedrons for you to collect out of this, that doesn't disappoint in that regard either. But yeah, I think it's a very solid, you know, it could be played as a standalone, but at this time, it could also apply a few pieces of integration from the rest of the expansion. So what are your final thoughts, FDP?
I thought it was a very good game, that there are parts that, you know, at times it frustrated me because all I was getting was light quiddity, and I kept trying to go, okay, I buy into the higher creature to be able to actually do something, and then they'd only come up as quiddity. So there is that mechanic of you need creatures, and you're only getting quiddity, so therefore you're buying more creatures and still not getting that. That was the only frustrating thing with me. Otherwise, I'd say this is a highly recommended game. And, well, it was fun. Boom.
There you go. So, with that said, this has been the impromptu game review of Quarriors, Light versus Dark, published by WizKids and designed by Mike Elliott and Eric M. Lang. And with that said, this is Scott Dyer and
FDP
signing off.
As a parting thought, I'd just like to remind our Milwaukee listeners that Elements of Gaming is now hosting D&D Adventures League. D&D Adventures League is an organized play program put on by Wizards of the Coast for Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition. Whether you're a seasoned veteran or just learning the game the first time, we encourage you to come down on Wednesday nights from 6:30 to 8:30 and partake in a variety of adventures. So if you're interested, you can see more information on the website at elementsgamingstore.com. And the address is 932 East Rawson Avenue, Oak Creek, Wisconsin. Hope to see you there.
And I found my boy.
I'm glad. I love it. You always have to take the pants. So that was Jeff Impromptu Game Review. I'm ready to get the next after this review last
time.
I've actually been trying to buy a Booker Donnie to kind of miss it. And having a lot of money in my local neighborhood bookstores and five bookstores and gaming bookstores. But I'd much rather track down a physical copy of it and support one of the local gaming stores than buy it online. So that's what I'm trying to do. That's on Amazon. The last resort. Nothing is Amazon. It's just we should be supporting our local gaming shops where we can. I believe that takes us to final thoughts.
It's a dangerous because of final thoughts. So, our contemplate your local game gods. Does he like gaming? Chances are the comments are contagious off the or type of the game. And what that means is that one of the biggest feedback that we're coming out is that they wanted more games. So there were less defenders, there were more tournaments, there were more prizes, and they were incredibly generous with the people in their feet. Not necessarily, you're not going to remember that with Gen Con, because they had everything. So they could literally cater to everyone. It was all done like this, attend them, and then you could create the community, which is what they have done.
What I have to say,
getting
to supporting your local game shop, your local gaming con. I'm also support other local creative endeavors, such as theaters. Help Me Mommy performs their university show every Saturday night at Harvard Theater. 230 Main Street, Harvard, Indiana. Tickets are just $8. Shows are $12. I can look at the top and the thing you can throw, and you have to clean it up. $50 in the long way. Also, Final Friday Film will be on March 27th this year, or this month.
Do we know what it's like?
We don't, because, even though I have an idea, I have something like to do. But I don't know if any of our listeners have ideas. Remember, Final Friday Film, if you go back to the ones from January and February, we featured genre and talk about the movies and games that connect. So, then please write to us at gamesradio@gmail.com and put Final Friday Film or FFF in the subline. You can also reach us via our Facebook.com/gamesradio. Our Twitter handle is gamesradio.cr. And on Tumblr, gamesradio. So, can you check out the write-up that our guests are doing and let us know what you think in the future. And as we say goodnight, let's pull out our old favorites. And this, so for DCR, this is Jake Greenberg.
And Donnie Greenberg.
And B.
Power Pals!
I gotta pause. Come on, man, pause.
I don't have to pause. I've got the power pouch.
What? What's the power pouch?
It is. I'm gonna tell you what the power pouch is all about.
Macho Man, I thought you lied.
Well, I've been to the top of the mountain, and what I saw there was the power pouch. Let me tell you something. I'm on the way down the SmackDown of no longer needing to urinate. The power pouch is here and now. It's so bad it works. I have been gaming for 36 hours. Oh, yeah!
Of the male and female versions, please consult a physician before taking on any new physical. Right. Please note that it may take bleeding, and frequent urination as a side effect of this product.
Ow!
Some assembly required, each sold separately. Please consult your parents before going online.
That is not included. Power Pouch!